easing down, 21 degrees for Glasgow and Belfast. For eastern Scotland, well, we'll see some sunny spells developing, but as that happens, there'll also be the risk of some scattered heavy thundery downpours, particularly over the Grampians. 22 degrees in Edinburgh. We'll see showers spreading south across England and Wales through the course of Wednesday night, some of them heavy. Further north, it'll turn a little drier. That's all from me. It's back to Steve.
Thank you, Ben. And I'll bring you the full shipping bulletin in 15 minutes. First on BBC Radio 4, our book of the week is the Latin American true crime classic, Operation Massacre. On a summer's evening in 1956, a group of neighbours gather in a house in a suburb in Buenos Aires.
Florida isn't the best part of the Vicente López district, but it's also not the worst. There are potholes in the pavement and no street signs at the corners. The average resident is a man between 30 and 40, who has his own home with a garden that he tends in his idle moments. He lives with his family, gets along with his neighbours, plays sports, and complains about the rising cost of living without getting too excited, no matter what government is in charge. This Saturday is identical to hundreds of others. The owner of the house in question, Mr. Horacio, has stayed on duty resolving clients' electrical problems until 8:45 p.m. On his way home, he bumps into his neighbour, Miguel Junta, and they stand talking for a moment. They've known each other for less than a year. "Why don't you come and watch the fights after dinner?" offers Mr. Horacio. Junta wavers. His wife's been feeling ill. If she's better, he might come. It's 9:30 p.m. At that moment, 30 kilometres away, a group of officers in Campo de Mayo set the tragic June uprising in motion. Mr. Horacio and Junta don't know this. Most of the country doesn't know it, and won't until after midnight when state radio makes an announcement. Junta isn't even 30 years old. He's tall, elegant and blonde, with a healthy dose of wit to him. But what you come away with is a sense of honour, of sincerity. Of all the witnesses who survived this tragedy, no one else will be as convincing or have as easy a time proving his innocence. Talking to him, seeing the indignation and the memories of horror gradually emerging from inside him, is enough to set aside any scepticism. About 15 men have filed into the back apartment that Mr. Horacio rents out to a man named Torres. They're chatting, playing cards, or listening to the radio. A man called Rogelio Diaz shows up. He's a retired NCO who lives nearby. Is he involved with the revolutionary movement? Maybe. All we know is that he's a cheerful, chatty guy who gets worked up playing rummy one minute and the next doesn't have a care in the world. The image we have of Carlitos Lizaso is sharper and more tragic. This tall, timid young man is 21 years old. Politics has always been a major topic of discussion in his household. His father was a member of the Radical Civil Union. Then he became a Peronist. By the time of the September Revolution, he's practically in the opposition. At the time of the 1955 Revolution, someone asked his son, "Who would you fight for?" Unsettled, Carlos replied, "I don't know. For no one." He works hard at his father's auction house and has a knack for earning money despite his young age. For relaxation, he plays chess. Well. On the afternoon of June the 9th, he goes to see his sister, then heads to his girlfriend's house. It's past 9 o'clock when he takes the bus to Florida. He walks a few blocks to the house with the blue gates and ventures into the alleyway. What does he know about the rebellion that's taking place at that exact moment? On the one hand, he's a calm, thoughtful young man who was exempted from military service and wouldn't know how to use the simplest weapon. On the other, after he leaves his girlfriend, she finds a piece of paper with his handwriting on it. "If all goes well tonight..." but all will not go well. There is one man who seems to see it coming. This man, who will later turn to terrorism and go by the name Marcello, plays a curious role in the events. He's a friend of both the Lisasso family and some of the other main characters. He feels like a father to Carlitos. That's why he's afraid, and why he wants to take the young man away with him. But he keeps finding him entertained, chatting, and he'll let himself be deterred by the same promise again and again. I'll leave in 10 minutes. Marcello isn't happy with this, and before leaving he takes aside the man who he considers responsible for the confusing situation that seems to be developing in the apartment.
Do any of these people know anything?
No, most of them know nothing.
So what are they doing here?
What do I know? They're going to listen to the fight.
Why are you letting them stay?
You want me to throw them out? It's not my apartment. Marcello tilts his head towards Carlitos.
Do what you want.
But that guy there, you don't take him anywhere, you hear me? The man shrugs his shoulders. Don't worry, I'm not. Besides, at this point, nothing's going to happen tonight. After Marcello goes, Gavino tells himself again, nothing's going to happen tonight. The piece of news should have been broadcast on the radio a while ago. If nothing's happening, then no one's in danger. Many of these men have simply stopped by, people he doesn't even know. It'd be ridiculous to say, get out, I'm about to start a revolution. Because there's no question that Gavino, despite being out of the loop and not knowing what to expect, is a part of the uprising. He's about 40 years old and was once an NCO of the National Gendarmerie. Sharp, short-tempered, and prone to bragging, he's been conspiring for some time now and is on the run, believing with good reason that the military authorities and the police are after him. He couldn't come up with a better plan than to take refuge in his friend Torres's apartment. Which brings us to Torres. To the owner of the building, he's an ordinary tenant who pays his rent on time and doesn't cause any problems, though sometimes he disappears for a few days, and when he comes back, doesn't say where he's been. To his neighbours, he's an easygoing, popular guy who likes to have people over for barbecues. To the police, he's dangerous and elusive. I found him, finally, many months later, taking asylum in a Latin American embassy. A resolute and extremely cautious man, he smiled at me without animosity. I don't have any reason to lie to you. There was no reason to shoot those men. Me? I'll give you that, since I was there, and they found some papers in my house. Nothing more than papers, though. No weapons, like they said. But I escaped. And Gavino escaped. He paused. Maybe he was thinking about those who hadn't escaped, about those who had nothing to do with it. I asked if there'd been talk of revolution. Not even remotely. For those who were involved, namely Gavino and me, all we had to do was give each other one look. But we were waiting for a sign that never came. The tragedy was that other guys from the neighbourhood also showed up, guys who saw people gathering at the house and came in to hear the fight or play cards like they always did. I didn't even know that guy, Liveraga. We didn't tell them anything because the reality was that up until that point, nothing had happened. I couldn't warn them because that would have raised suspicions. A few minutes more and every one of them would have gone home and nothing would have happened. Liveraga is a bus driver. Still in his 20s, he lives at home with his father, a building contractor. In the face of danger, Liveraga will prove to be lucid and calm, and once the danger has passed, he'll show a great moral courage. He'll be the only one among the survivors who dares to come forward and demand justice. Does he know anything about the planned rebellion? He'll flatly deny that he does. But many people in Buenos Aires do know about the rebellion, even if they aren't taking part. Still, of the numerous testimonies we collected, there's not one that suggests Liveraga was involved or informed. At 10 o'clock that night, he bumped into a friend from his football club. Rodriguez is a tower of a man who loads cargo at the port. He's married with three kids, and he's told his wife he's going to work. Is it an innocent lie to cover up a night out? Or is he hiding something more serious? On the one hand, he is a peronist. On the other, he's an open, talkative man who finds it difficult to keep quiet about anything important. A survivor who knew him well later observed, if the big guy had wanted to, he could have messed up those thugs in a heartbeat. But he's completely passive when they take him to be killed. Perhaps he never thought they were going to kill him, not even at the last minute, when it became obvious. Rodriguez suggests they go to listen to the fight at his friend's house. At 11 o'clock, the champion, Lauce, will fight the Chilean, Loaiza, for the middleweight South American title. Rodriguez leads his young companion through the blue gates and makes his way down the alley. There are about a dozen men inside the back apartment. Around 10:45, two strangers show up. If what was about to happen weren't so tragic, it would be comic. Torres thinks they're Gavino's friends. Gavino thinks they're Torres's. Only later will they learn that these men are undercover cops, there to investigate the situation. When they leave, they'll report there are no weapons on site and the coast is clear. It's a necessary precaution, as a man armed with a revolver could cover the side alley. Yet when the police arrive, no one shows even the slightest resistance. At 10:50, the group playing cards falls silent as the boxing commentator announces the arrival of the contestants in the ring. In the front apartment, Mr. Horacio's wife talks briefly to her husband and his guest before turning in. Perfect calm reigns in the house. Her daughter's preparing food for the guest while Mr. Horacio turns on the radio. At around the same time, 20 men have gathered at Florida's second precinct to carry out a mysterious operation. When Officer Painter finds out who's leading them, he thinks, something big. The word revolution hasn't yet been uttered, certainly not on the radio, which is absorbed in a fight that lasts less than 10 minutes. Somewhere in the middle of the third round, the champion knocks the Chilean out for the count. Mr. Horacio and Yunta exchange a smile of satisfaction. From the bedroom, Senora Pilar asks her husband for a hot water bottle. Mr. Horacio goes to the kitchen and is returning with it when they hear violent knocks on the door and a shout sounds out in the silence of the night.
Police!
Mr. Horacio is so taken aback, he doesn't even manage to put the hot water bottle down. He runs, turns the key in the lock, and before he can unhook the chain, the door is pushed in violently from the other side and he's shoved, surrounded, mobbed by a throng of armed policemen who flood the rooms of the house. The one in charge is a tall, moustached man with a striking sense of authority, wearing the uniform of the Argentine army. Mr. Horacio is terrified. He manages to put his hands up, still holding on to the hot water bottle that at this point is burning his fingers. The leader of the group smacks it out of his hand.
Where's Tanco?
It's the first time Mr. Horacio has heard the name of the rebel general, whose dramatic escape from a firing squad will only become public knowledge a few days later. The leader of the group pushes him aside and walks up to Yunta, who's still in his chair, open-mouthed. The leader deliberately puts the gun to his throat.
Where's Tanco?
Nigel Anthony is reading Operation Massacre by Rodolfo Walsh. It's abridged and produced by Jane Marshall Productions for BBC Radio 4 and continues at this time tomorrow. Next, the ships. This is BBC Radio 4. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday, the 21st of August. The general synopsis at 1800, low just west of Rockall, 1006, expected Malin, 1017 by 1800 Wednesday. High, Portland, 1029, expected Seoul, 1022 by same time. New high, expected Faroes, 1023 by that time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours, Viking, north Utsira, southwesterly becoming variable, then northeasterly, 4. Occasional rain, moderate or good. South Utsira, 40s. Southerly or southwesterly becoming variable, 4. Occasional rain, moderate or good, occasionally poor. Cromartie, 4th. South, 4 or 5, becoming variable, then northeast, 4. Occasional rain, fog patches later. Moderate or poor, occasionally variable.